Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast, Corner Name Special, Part 2. You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast, and I am joining you from a hotel room in Miami because so many of you demanded a sequel to the Corner Names podcast that we did in the winter off-season. So, if this show is terrible, it's your fault. Literally hundreds of people after the Corner Names podcast requested that we do a part two. So, it's your fault, and it's also Chris Stevens' fault. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Spanners. You are looking tanned and well rested, almost as if you've had an extra bit of rest compared to when we were supposed to record this show.
Okay, so you want me to confess this before we start the show? Yes, I am in Miami after doing a very, very hectic schedule over the F1 weekend. So from Wednesday to Sunday, it was 20 hours a day. I'm not exaggerating. So from Wednesday till 3 a.m. Sunday. So yes, I've got a day off, and yeah, I may have bought a six pack and hung out on South Beach in Miami. And yes, I may have messaged you going, can I have another hour? This is glorious.
Wow. My heart bleeds for you that you had to work.
I did. I had to work at my job. Can you believe it? We also have with us, of course, from the first episode, we have Chris Catman Turner. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Spanners. I'm not sure where you are. Can you just tell us where you are again?
I'm in Miami because I've been talking about it a lot, but I'm very, very pleased with myself that I'm at Miami because I couldn't afford to just go on a jolly. It's not been a jolly. Well, it has a little bit because it's fun and there's sport cars running round and round and round. F1 cars go meow. But also, there's been like networking, content, interviewing people. A big media organization said, that guy is here? Okay, well, he's a warm body in a chair that can say things. So whilst we thought we were going to have a lot of time off, we had less than zero time off. So get off my back, Catman.
Well, I'm glad it wasn't the only six-pack that you saw on the beach was in a keg.
It was the only one in the vicinity of my towel, put it that way. Chris Stevens, we are heading off on our journey of corner names. And whilst we delve into the etymology of those corner names.
What etymology. A big word. Well yeah. Done.
Well, it's whether I got it right or not. If you hadn't drawn attention to it, I wouldn't have doubted myself. But also, it gives us a chance to dwell on those circuits and tracks as well. So what tracks and corners are we looking at today?
Well, we had quite a few left over from the part one, which was the Christmas Eve special. That was a lovely Christmas Day present for all of you lovely listeners.
Oh, it was, wasn't it? Yeah, Christmas Eve. Yeah.
It was, yes. But today we are going to look at Monza. We are also going to look at Zandvoort, which is a sort of relatively new in terms of modern F1. But it's got
I count that as a new track. So there might be some old sweats out there who go, oh no, it was out there in 1886. But I can't remember in my viewing career as a kid watching Zandvoort. It hasn't stuck out of my memory.
So. It looked very different back then as well, in fairness. So yeah, we will have a couple of other bits and bobs. And I think we'll end on Imola and then a couple of interesting stories from Suzuka.
I think Imola is an absolutely fascinating track and I love Suzuka. So when we come from the sim racing world, like these are tracks that are energy error generators. They're really, really challenging. So like, I'm looking forward to this. And I think as well, we might be in danger of this being one of the last Imola Grand Prix as well.
I was going to say, because it's the next race, isn't it?
It is the next race. Yeah.
Yeah. Emilia Romagna. And I don't know how much we're sort of chomping at the bit to have Imola back again, because obviously it was cancelled last year.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm genuinely torn on it. It's an out and out classic track. There's so much history there. Obviously, so much of like the poignant tragedy of a recent anniversary of Ayrton Senna and Roland Ratzenberger. And if you go on a sim and you go on that track in a F4 or an F3, it's glorious, but it's sort of got that Barcelona Monaco thing where maybe F1 really has outgrown it.
I'll tell you what though. If anybody watched the World Endurance Championship race there, the 6 hours of Monza, the racing there was actually pretty dang spectacular. And that was before the rain hit as well. Like, you imagine two Ferraris going side by side and trying to do the old up and under at the last two corners at Imola, which is exactly what happened in WEC. Again, just proving the point that smaller, lighter cars is the way forward.
Can you believe it?
yeah, believe it, because it's true.
I can't believe that very obvious thing that everyone always says is the thing that prevents good racing.
It's actually true, yeah.
Yeah, and it had good racing back in 06 when we had Schumacher versus Alonso. There wasn't any overtaking.
Hang on a minute.
But
hang on a minute.
That was a defensive masterclass.
It was a defensive masterclass, but we're talking about that was a race to remember because Schumacher couldn't overtake Fernando Alonso. I get the point you're trying to make, because I've always said a great race doesn't need to have 1,000 overtakes in it. But I don't know if that was necessarily the right the right point. But I get your point.
In F1, though, it is hard to find a race at Imola that is a proper classic for dicing, because it is a little bit narrow. And also because it's quite highly reliant on downforce. And so that does mean that they struggle to follow and then overtake. So
we could take certain tracks and go, okay, let's blow them up to Tilkodrome size. But would that solve it? If we made Hungaroring Abu Dhabi size, if we made Barcelona just that little bit bigger, I think you could make Barcelona as good as Malaysia if you could just somehow stretch it.
I think Barcelona, they've managed to do that with the changes to the final sector now, and it's back in its original, you know, prime form. And I do think the races are better there now because of it. And I think in Imola, they kind of already have done that, or they've tried to do it by not having the chicane that they used to have back then as well. And they still have it for like the World Superbike races, but I think in terms of car racing, nothing really uses it anymore.
That chicane, though, is one of the best places in the world for getting slow-mos of the cars flying through the air as they clatter over the massive
curb. I hate that chicane. Are we talking the second chicane? Or the chicane towards
the end? No. Yeah. We're talking about the last chicane that they don't use anymore.
They don't use...
On the main straight. So you know how the straight is just straight now?
Oh, okay. There was a chicane there. Okay, fair enough.
There was a chicane there. Back in there...
Yes, there were two. The one that I was talking about was the one with the huge curves. But as you say, there was one just before the start finish. But they, as you say, they've just got rid of that for a long fast drag now.
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
go on. Yeah.
Look, we're talking about Imola. Let's do some corner names.
Okay. So what I think the idea here is that we want to talk about the history of the corner names for sure, but we also want to talk about those corners as well. And I'll be interested, which one of us here could name all the corners at Imola? But you've done the research, Chris, so that's cheating. Well,
I mean, I've got them listed out here.
Okay, so yeah. I know three. I know Tamburello. I know Acqua Minerale.
Nice. It is one that I do have to look up more often than not. It's not like
I look at the track map every time.
They're ingrained in my head. I was commentating at Croft the other week and I had to have a track map in front of me for that as well. Cause I'm like, which one's the Jim Clark S's? And there's a kink there. It's called Hawthorne. I never call it that. I never even think of it as a corner. But
let's start at Imola, because Imola starts with a kink to the right. Does that count as a corner?
A kink to the left, which right. technically is turn one, I think. But
no, it's kink to the right. What are you on about?
No, it's kink.
Imola goes down the straight and kinks to the right before the first chicane.
Have you been watching Formula One in a mirror?
It's definitely left. This is where
right before the timing line. But if you're at
you're right. Okay, you're right. Yeah. I just envisaged the Bottas Russell clash, and that's what brings that one to life. Yeah. So that is turn one. Is it the kink?
Technically, I think that is turn one, but it hasn't got a name.
We'll call it the Bottas kink now. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Call it the
Russell head slap kink. Yeah.
Yeah. But the first real corner you come to is obviously Tamburello. And we did touch on this in our part one as well, because it's an old Italian sport, Tamburello. And there used to be a court near there. It's a pretty crazy sport, actually.
It is. After the episode, I went and watched some of it on YouTube, and it's absolutely crazy. They're just absolutely slapping this ball with this huge bat. And there's five aside, and there's huge crowds. It's a really popular sport in that part of the country, and it looks completely brutal, but amazing.
Yeah. So obviously after that, you then go into the next chicane, which is the very fast flick left and then slow it down into the right, which I think when we had the peak downforce cars in like 2020, this is one of the best corners to watch a Formula One car around. And that is the Variante Villeneuve. So to kind of cross off a lot of lines here, Variante in Italian means chicane. So
is it?
No. At Monza as well, Variante.
Then I know grazie Vivientes.
Variantes.
I think that tracks. So the problem here is this is a collision point, but the runoff isn't concrete. So this is one of the least bad chicanes. So if you have gravel in a chicane and there's an incentive to not just go on, that I think that makes the corner a bit less silly. So this is relatively unsilly, but you do get a lot of contact at this chicane.
Yeah, that's one thing that sets Imola out from, say, tracks like Paul Ricard, is that there is no real runoff, and the runoff that you have is treacherous, which makes errors punished. And that can be interesting for racing, obviously. It's safely done is okay, but that's the beauty of this circuit, is that there's lots of scenery nearby and the cars will go off into the gravel and get totaled if there's a problem. So you have to really be accurate and careful with what you're doing around here. The Villeneuve chicane, as you say, the first part is so fast in these current cars with the downforce that they just flick it right, and it is quite difficult to overtake here.
Question, is that chicane quite new? Because as a kid is it not? So
no, it's very
honestly,
old.
When they brought the Imola back, I think was it 2020, I just didn't recognize the layout from a kid playing Nigel Mansell 92 video games or whatever. So there's been some changes to that track, I think, since 94.
I think obviously the big change to the layout since 94 was making Tamburello a chicane rather than a sweeping left-hander.
Right. Okay.
That's, in terms of the layout, that's really the biggest change.
Well, that might be it, because that's leading up to the point at which Ratzenberger and Senna died.
I can't remember where Ratzenberger
died. The same corner as Senna, I think. Is that not right?
No. I think it was... It might have actually been the Villeneuve corner. No, I don't think it was... I don't think it was Tamburello. I'm sure someone in the comments will correct me, but obviously, just to tick this one off, it's called Villeneuve, as it's named after, of course, the legendary Gilles Villeneuve, who had a crash there in 1980.
I'm going to stop you there, because we've done some middle-aged men Googling things, Catman.
Yep, the round to Villeneuve, unfortunately, was where Ratzenberger lost his life. So it's right. the following corner after Tamburello.
And then after that, you got uphill to the hairpin at Tosa, which...
Tosa, I did know that one. Now,
was it Montoya and Schumacher who tangled there? And Schumacher just drove him off the circuit. He said, I didn't see him. And Montoya said he had to have been blind or stupid not to see him there.
Yeah, didn't he give him the bird as well, I think?
He might have done, yeah.
I caught some clips of Montoya, I think, on Beyond the Grid recently, so I've been meaning to catch up with that episode. But the clip I saw of him was really telling. He was asked, did you fight Schumacher particularly hard? And he said, well, no, but no one else did. So because everyone was just letting him through and thinking, oh, it's not worth fighting him, he said, that really upset me. And I took that personally and I wanted to fight him. So he said no, but then the answer was yes, I did fight Schumacher harder.
Yeah, it's almost the same with Max now, isn't it? Like, there's no point fighting him. You know your race isn't with him. But imagine if Lando had thought that in Miami.
Well, Norris managed to win that race without overtaking anyone. I think he went from fifth on the grid without overtaking anyone.
The most he had to get his elbows out was defending against Max at the restart.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. So Tosa,
by the way, I was there at Miami, by the way. Did you know? I was there at the race.
You've got yourself a brand new Lando hat, which is on the bed behind you.
I have. It's not in shot here. So, like I said on the race review, I wore the Lando hat on Friday. He got taken out on Saturday, and he got taken out in the sprint race. So I took it off quickly for the Sunday. I'm the curse. Or am I his lucky charm?
I used to think this about, I'm just glossing over it.
Orange is like a charm anyway.
I used to think this about watching races live I started watching Formula One and it was China 2010. And because it was China, I didn't watch it live. McLaren were 1-2, Jensen and Lewis, right? And then the next race I watched live which was Spain, and Hamilton retired on like the last lap after his front left just fell off.
Jensen was only
fifth. And then the next race was Monaco, which was the famous Mark Priestley leaving the bung in the radiator and his car expired after a few laps. And then Lewis was only fifth. And I thought, oh no, I'm the curse, obviously watching the races live. But then McLaren were 1-2 at the next two races. So
if you're the Lewis Hamilton curse, that does give away that you've been watching all of Lewis Hamilton's races since 2021.
Well, I can tell you for a fact I have not. So there. But yeah, Tosa, just to get back on track.
Sorry, it's my bad. It's my beach beers.
I don't have a concrete answer for all of these, but it's believed to be the name of an old farm, which is where the track now is. So again, you know, like at Spa, where it's all just named after nearby things, it's a bit like that.
Okay, that's fascinating, Chris. Thank you for that. Where are we going next? So Tosa is the hairpin. Then we go up the hill to the left-hander.
The left-hander at Pirotella. And this one was a really difficult one to actually try and get down. I had to message an Italian friend of mine. And you know, he's done a fair bit of work at Monza. I'm like, dude, I can't find an explanation for like any of these corner names. Can you help me? So he managed to give me one for Pirotella. And again, it's a bit of a guess, but it seems to be like a version of an old timey land name. So maybe it's like something near the circuit that used to be called Pirotella or something close to that. But that's the closest explanation I could get for this one.
This is a good one, though, because this corner sets you up for going through Acqua Minerale as well. And it's one of those classic corners. Great. It's really good. So you're up the hill, and because it's uphill, you don't have to brake as much. So it's like maybe like a brush in the brake in the F3 when we do it on the sim. And then it's one of those classic ones, a little bit like Stowe, where you're back on the power really early, and it's how much do you dare to take? Because that does give you a little bit of runoff to the outside of that. Yeah. But you know, you talk about the track being tight and twisty. Even with all that jeopardy, it's still not an overtaking spot.
It's a very tempting spot, though. In the sim, I've been very tempted to just throw it down the inside and see what happens.
Dumb but you tend ways to die.
Yeah, that's a very dumb way to die going the upside of Pirotella.
I think we're moving on, Chris. Feel the flow.
No, I was trying to remember the line before that. Something like unrefrigerated pie. So Acqua Minerale, again, is a name of a park.
Ah.
Which is nearby.
An aqua
and
park.
And Acqua Minerale is just like such a mega complex.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
In most cars, that first right is just like a lift or something, and then you're slowing it all down in that very short bit of track between the two right-handers.
Do you know what it's like? It's like turn one and two at Suzuka, where you're flinging it at turn one that's sort of almost not a corner, but it is, and then you have to hit the brakes to go right.
But it's like more aggressive, and I think more spectacular as well, because it's done in like a shorter space of time.
And it's downhill, then the compression as you turn right and go back up the hill. So it's an absolutely stunning set of corners. But again, no overtaking through there, that's for sure.
No, definitely not. Your next best overtaking opportunity comes after the short uphill straight that follows Acqua Minerale to the Variante Alta.
Ugh.
And
gross chicane.
Yes, this is the thing. So far, like, okay, Villeneuve isn't really like a safety chicane. I think it's...
No, it's a racing chicane.
It's definitely not one of the chicanes that we have like a major problem with, because it's actually a really cool couple of corners. But the Variante Alta looks very clumsy. It's because they like clobber over the curves.
Have they always had it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's always had ridiculous curbs on it as well.
It's horrible.
Yep. And it is the highest point of the track, hence top. Variante again.
Variante chicane means top. You're saying that like it's obvious.
No, Variante means chicane, like I said earlier. But you really are buzzed, aren't you?
I'm not going to remember things from earlier. I've had so much sun today.
Alta is top.
Okay.
Top
so
chicane.
You have to have those big curbs to make it not something that you can just fly across. So if you look at Miami at the weekend through that silly underpass section where Max hit the bollard, but they've got a bollard there. That bollard proved ineffective. Here you go, right, okay, are the big curbs a incentive to stay within track limits? I guess they are. Yeah. So it's the closest you can have to just having a wall there. So if you had a wall there, that would be extremely dangerous. It's not Bella Island. But it just, to me, that it kills the racing experience. And it just leaves too much choice between wreck the car completely or give up time. And I understand that's a skill differentiator. It's just a rubbish one.
It certainly used to be a car differentiator, because back in the noughties when Adrian Newey was designing the McLarens, he designed a car that could ride the curbs much better than the others. So McLaren had a huge advantage at Imola because there were some savage curbs here and those McLarens could ride them so much better. And again, you know, through those slow-mos, you could just see the difference. The Ferrari that they were up against with Schumacher, it was wobbling all over the place, but the McLaren just could glide over them. And it was particularly visible through the Variante Alta that they could make so much progress compared to the cars, because they could just ride those curbs that much sweeter.
Yeah.
And do you have that skill differentiators, Fanners? Remember Charles Leclerc trying to make up some ground in the last race we had at Imola, which would have been 2022, and he spun the car at that track, desperately trying to take second place or something from Perez, I think it was, or something. And spun the car trying to be like aggressive. I think you don't like it because you don't like having to make that decision in the sim.
Yes. So, there's a long running now tradition of me speaking about my sim racing as if it's exactly as hard and the same as Formula One. And I'm not going to change. But yeah, in the sim there, the payoff of when you hit the loud pedal and the risk of just losing it in the back end spinning around is massive. So yes, it could be my own sim racing PTSD.
Okay. Well, we all have PTSD at the Variante Alta, to be honest.
No, but it's rubbish. It's not good for racing, is it? And it looks rubbish and everyone hates it. So why can't we just get rid of rubbish things and enjoy our life?
Tell the hypercars that they seem to get on just fine.
Do they? More clearance.
Yeah. Well, it was good race at Imola that they had. So
I'm not slating Imola at all. I'm slating chicanes.
So you're basically slating Imola,
which is mostly chicanes, yes.
And Monza, which we'll get onto next, right after I tell you about Rivazza, which is the last two corners. You got Rivazza 1 and Rivazza 2, I suppose. And again, this is the name of a riverbank near these two.
I like that. So what came first? Right, because there's three corner complexes I can think of that are like this. So you've got this, Ravatsa, and then we have the Degnas in Japan, and we have as well in Monza, between the second and third hairpin, we've got corners that are very similar to this.
The Lesmos.
Monza is one of the oldest circuits in the world.
Yeah, I think because when you're building a track, pick corners that are iconic and copy them.
But Imola, the Ravatsas are significantly slower than, say, the Degnas, which is probably the fastest of those three you've mentioned there.
No, but I think the general sort of, the corner layout is you have to drag the brakes and do weight transfer into the first one and then hit the brakes again for the second one in the same direction.
See, it's because Degna is one where it's slower the second one.
Yeah.
But the Lesmos is the other way around, where the first one's longer.
It opens up. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And the Imola one, definitely the first one is a stop. That's quite a hefty stop. And then you sort of drag the brake through the second one. And it is one of the most infuriating corners in the sim.
It is, and if it wasn't for the previous chicane, it would probably be one of the biggest overtaking points as well, because the chicane has the effect of stretching the cars out before the short straight before it. But if you had the long run from Acqua Minerale all the way up and then down the hill, that would be perfect. And you'd have a big stop and get lots of overtaking.
Certainly would. One place you get lots of overtaking, though, is Monza. And I know everyone likes to refute this and say, chicanes are terrible for racing. And Monza's no good for racing, but I shan't have it. Monza is a wonderful circuit, and I won't have anyone say a bad word about it. So again,
fight
let's
about
remember.
That? Hang on, I think we should fight about that. Right? Do we like Monza?
I love Monza.
Yep, Monza's awesome.
kind of.
The opposing council would like to make a statement.
No, not really, because, if I get offered tickets to Monza, I'm going, and Monza is on my wish list. It is a classic track, and in fact, Catman, it is the layout that we have now is a massive compromise in safety. The olden days layout was insane.
Are we talking the olden days when we used to have
I wanted you to do both, and I know you're an expert on both. So the old, and then the medium old, and then what we have now.
Well, I was very lucky to go to Monza in 2014, and I sat at the second chicane, or what's that one called? The
Della Roggia.
Della Roggia, that's the one. And it was a really cool place to sit, because you see the cars coming in at nearly 230 miles an hour, and then slamming on the brakes. And that year was when we had Ricciardo sold the dummy to his experienced 4-time champion teammate. Throw it up the inside and put himself firmly on the map, and to be honest, probably sent Vettel on his way to Ferrari.
That's the one where Hamilton and Leclerc came together, and it was no, we won't penalise, we just do a black and white flag. I think it was also Alonso and Jolyon Palmer came together there, and then Jolyon Palmer later went out of the race, and Alonso went, that is justice.
He said karma.
Karma, that was it. Yeah, that's great. It's a great racing corner.
Where Hamilton and Piastri came together last year as well.
So if you want to object to the chicanes there, the second two chicanes are great. My only objection really is to the turn one chicane. That's the safety chicane, and it sucks and it's stupid.
Because it used to be a very different layout, didn't it? It used to be a left-right, left-right. Yeah,
that's right. It's where Häkkinen had clunted the curb really badly, spun off, and then went in the bushes and went for a cry, thinking that he couldn't be seen, but the helicopter was watching him, which is really sad. Yeah.
But for those of us that are younger than you, Uncle Catman, tell us about the olden days Monza.
So the olden days Monza. So it used to be. Imagine the track that you have now with no chicane spanners. This is your heaven,
a
right?
Dream.
There was no first chicane, no second chicane, nothing. But what it did was, so when you came round the parabolica, or the current parabolica, It was slightly tighter than it was before, and they split the start-finish straight down the middle with a barrier. So you came along the right-hand side of the start-finish straight, and then you've fired yourself onto the Curva Nord Alta Velocita, which is the first banked corner, which was...
Say the name again.
No, I shan't.
A one-hit wonder.
So it's the first banked chicane, and it was amazing. So the banking on the oval at Monza is 38 degrees. Now, to put that into perspective, the banking at Indianapolis, which caused all the problems in 2005, is 9 degrees. And most of these, the NASCAR circuits are 31 to 33. So it's really steep. I went there, as I say, in 2014. I'm trying to do what Spanners are doing by name dropping. I've been to a race circuit.
Do it.
But I went. So when I was at Monza, I tried to climb up the banking. And you're kind of, the first bit's easy. You think, oh, this is fine. And then you're scrabbling and it looks like a vertical wall in front of you. And you get to the top, take a picture, and then you slide back down. It's just imagining being in a car up the top of that banking, because that's obviously where you'd be the fastest because you got less scrubbing on the tires. It would just be an incredible sensation. But anyway, as you're bouncing along there, it's made of concrete as well. It's not very smooth. So you're bouncing along. Oh, I did a Vangina. I knocked the mic. Sorry. Anyway, you're bouncing along the bouncing along the concrete, and then you come flying down along the left hand side of the start finish straight and back onto the circuit again. So it was doubled the length of the circuit, but it must have been an awesome spectacle to see them going around that oval.
I think it's absolutely terrifying. And when I went to Monza last year, I had the same thing. When I went to Spa the first time, I said, it's a rite of passage, I have to go and climb up Eau Rouge. I went to Monza and I said, rite of passage, I have to go up the banking. Didn't find time for it, unfortunately, which was a real shame. But I'm going back in October for the GT Open finale. So hopefully I'll find time to do it then. I think the easiest way to do it is where the banking rejoins the start-finish straight, because you can get up to the... If you go to the right-hand side of it, if you're sort of walking backwards down the straight, you'll end up on the top of it, which is significantly easier than starting at the bottom and trying to get up to the top of it.
That's right. And unfortunately, they've cornered off a lot of the first bit of the banking, and you can only go a certain way down that second part. But they've given you enough so you can experience it.
There's one spot where all the teams go every year, basically.
You mentioned... rejoining at Parabolica from there, from the banking. And Parabolica, to me, is one of the iconic, like growing up watching F1 in the 80s and 90s, Parabolica is one of the F1 corners. And I think probably one of the best ones leading onto a back straight. So perhaps mm-hmm. that's why we get such good racing into turn one, even at the silly chicane, is because, that's inviting. If you look at Mexico, where you come through the stadium and it just slows people down and spreads the field out, Parabolica seems to be not that. And in fact, rather than having to slow down a lot and get to the apex, you're almost wall running around the outside line on occasion at Parabolica. And so now they've got concrete runoff there for MotoGP. Is that why they had runoff? But when they had grass, was it grass and gravel, but not concrete? Yeah. There was real jeopardy in that corner. And I'm not one of these that goes, oh, bring back gravel. I want to see cars flipping on their head and then catching fire. I'm not that, but in that one particular scenario, the concrete runoff has kind of ruined Parabolica for me. And that's the only case that I can say that.
Yeah, there's a bit of a compromise where there's a bit of tarmac and then a bit of gravel.
Didn't they have a grass strip there at one point, or a strip of artificial grass?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. And it was at that corner last year where, was it last year or the year before, one of the F2 cars got launched into the barrier. No,
this was a few years ago. This was Alex Pironi in the F3, because there used to be a giant sausage curb.
That's the one.
That's it, yeah.
Who thought that was a good idea? And it sent it like 20 feet into the air and into the Marshall post, which is crazy. If you've ever seen that video.
Yeah. And that corner, of course, now you'll be not pleased to hear, Spanners, is now not called the Parabolica.
No, it is. I'll fight you. It is. What is it called?
It's now the Curva Alboreto, after Michele Alboreto, who used to drive for Ferrari. He Yeah, he took three wins.
Grand Prix winner for Ferrari.
Yeah.
And it was done to mark 20 years since his passing.
Okay. And as a new Ferrari fan, next year I will find that to be an honourable and worthy corner name change. But this is my last season of going, no, that's Parabolica. But I will, of course, acquiesce to the Tifosi next season.
But Parabolica comes from, because the geometry of the corner is similar to a parabola.
Yeah, we know.
Which is like on a graph, it's like a U-shaped line.
Yeah.
Which I had to delve back into my GCSE maths to get that one. There are a couple, you know, like this, where they've got named, where it's named after, you know, famous Ferrari drivers. The biggest one, obviously, being Ascari.
Mm-hmm. Which is
it's not really a chicane. It's a left-hander with two kinks of acceleration zone.
It's it depends what car you're in, if that's a chicane or not, I suppose.
So yeah, that's true.
If you've got lots of downforce, then it's a flat left-hand kink onto the brakes. But there's enough cars that have to treat that as two corners.
Yeah. But I think if you're in any type of single-seater, it's building back onto the power slowly through the right, and then you should be flat through the left, really. But that, of course, is named after Alberto Ascari. He was a local to Milan, which is where the circuit is near. He was Ferrari's first F1 world champion, and it is also where he unfortunately died testing a sports car.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
As well. And that used to be just like a long left, didn't it? In the same way that the Lesmos basically used to be one corner as well.
Okay, cool. Does that bring us to the end of Monza?
No.
One more thing before we move on from Monza. I wanted to give you a little anecdote of when I was there, just reminding you that I was there at one point. So we got GA tickets, so we didn't have a grandstand or anything like that. So Monza is situated in a massive forest. And so what we decided to do was get right up to the barrier, and my friend got his straps from his rucksack, found a plank of wood and strapped it to the barrier so he could then stand up a little bit higher and see. But that was nothing compared to some German guys who had turned up just next to us. They had hidden some scaffolding in the forest.
I heard
the week
about this.
Before.
You were there.
And then, they built their own grandstand just to the right of us. It was just watching them construct it. We were going, what is going on here? They built a full grandstand and they were up there with their steins. It was amazing. It was so cool.
Oh, man. I know. I heard about that. That was in the news.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they'd hidden it in the forest. It was so funny. Unfortunately, not. No, I was dressed head to toe in Union Jacks, so I think they saw me a mile off.
Well, Union flags, because you're not a boat, so.
Oh, well.
Fun fact, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that the classic German beer stein with the lid, where you press your thumb and the lid comes up, is illegal to sell in the United Kingdom. And that is a historic law based on that being the, you know, a part of the officers' mess of the German military in the 40s.
I had no idea. Fascinating.
Wow. That might have been a random thing. I grew up in the 90s where people said stuff in pubs and you couldn't Google to check if it's true. So there you go.
Can I talk about Monza?
Oh, race cars, F1, sure. Okay. But okay, the Steins episode is next. Okay. So
I'm going to run through the first five corners very quickly because they are incredibly basic. Right. So you got the chicane, the first chicane, the Variante di Rettifilio. So Variante, we know, means chicane.
Chicane, and the other bit means rubbish and pointless, get rid of it.
Rettifilio, do you know what? You're very close because it means straight.
Is it?
It's the straight chicane.
Make it straight.
It's the straight chicane. You'll love this as well. Curva grande. You know what that means?
It means big curve.
Big curve.
Yeah.
Big curve. And then, so the Della Roggia, that's another one we were talking about. So Della Roggia means like the canal. So it's like the chicane of the canal. But nobody really knows why it's called that, because there's no like, you know, water stream or anything there. So that's a bit of an oddball.
It's like Spa. Every corner seemed to be named after water sources.
But there is water.
Why do they do that?
That's the thing. There's not a lot of water in Monza.
So Curva Grande is actually between those two chicanes. Even though it's basically a flat out, it's flat out.
It's
in
acceleration.
Yeah.
And it's also named after a size of coffee. So,
but it does make it exciting in the Italian Grand Prix when you have cars coming out of the first chicane heading towards the second chicane. The Curva Grande does make it look like it's not just a straight. You do have to pick your position. You can move in different ways through that turn than you can in a straight. So you can sort of weave a little bit more. You can do more with your car position than you could if it was just a straight.
That's where Vettel and Alonso famously had their overtake, where I think, was it Alonso overtook half on the grass?
Vettel overtook on the grass.
Other way around, yeah.
In 2011. And then the following year, Alonso tried to do it and Vettel kind of shoved him over a little bit more aggressively than Alonso did.
Man, Alonso Vettel, that's an underrated historic battle, isn't it? I think.
Oh, yeah. Love 110%, especially in 2012. Oh, yeah. And do you know what? I think that was one of like, even though they went for the title that year, the two of them,
yeah,
that was one of like two times that year they actually met each other on track. When you think about like Hamilton and Verstappen met each other on track every single weekend.
Yeah, but because in 2012, there was, you forget, like Hamilton was in contention for that championship. And in 2010, like eight people were in contention. So So back then there was more cars in contention. So we didn't know week to week who the battle was going to be between.
That's the thing. It was a very different type of championship, wasn't it? It was very clear from the outset in 2021 it was going to be between Hamilton and Verstappen because they were the two fastest cars. Whereas in like 2012, we didn't know who was going to be.
In fact, 2012, there were six different race winners in the first six races.
There were seven.
Okay, Maldonado, Rosberg, Hamilton, Vettel, Webber.
Hang on, no, Spanish, you're doing them out of order. It's the only way I can do in order.
Okay, do it in order.
So in order, it was Jensen in Australia,
Mr. Button to you.
Yeah, Mr. Button. And then what was the second race that year? It must have been, Vettel won
Bahrain.
Vettel won in Bahrain, but that wasn't until like race four.
What we're learning here is that Chris does not know them in order.
No, hang on.
Catman's looking up. He's going to rescue you. Come on, Catman.
Catman, save me. Hang on. What was the second race that year? It used to go Australia. Must have been Malaysia.
Maybe,
Right. So it was... It was Jensen, then Fernando. Nico
Rosberg,
won in China, then Vettel won in Bahrain, then
Maldonado
won in Spain.
In Spain, And then the garage caught on fire. The Williams garage caught on fire.
Yeah, Lewis was disqualified from qualifying, and then Maldonado won, and his garage caught on fire. Mm-hmm. Number six would have been Mark Webber in Monaco, and then number seven was Lewis in Canada. And then there was, and then Fernando Alonso became the first repeat winner in Valencia. And also Kimi Raikkonen won in Abu Dhabi as well. So there are eight winners total. Don't you?
Wow.
So Spence, at the head of the show, you asked, how do you remember corner names? That is how a commentator like Chris remembers corner names and people's names. I can barely remember my own children's names sometimes. So,
when I was on the beach in Miami, where I am right now, I was, because I'm in Miami doing Miami things, I was trying to think which tracks would I be able to go, right, from the turn one, I can name all the corners and describe it all. And I think there's only two. I think I can only do it with Silverstone and Spa. How many do you think you could do, Chris?
All of them except correct. No. Sao Paulo, no.
Oh, Suzuka. I could do Suzuka. Yeah, I could do Suzuka.
Suzuka's only got like two corner names, though.
Well, then I know both of them.
Okay, great. Sao Paulo, I always struggle with because it's all in Portuguese.
Portuguese. Please.
Yeah, Portuguese.
We're classy.
And Imola, just because I haven't actually seen that many races at Imola and I always forget it. But otherwise, most of them.
And then the new ones just say like turn A. So if I did a track, it would be turn one, turn B, turn three.
That'll be
turn
that little
IV.
Like, turn IV like they're using footnotes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Are we moving to Zandvoort now?
I have one more from Monza, which is quite, it's an interesting one, right? So the strait between the Lesmos, which is named after a nearby town, and Ascari actually has a name, not often referred to. You never hear it in commentary. No one ever seems to say it, but it is called the Curva di Seraglio.
Is it? Like, it's a little kink. It's not like Curva Grande that introduces a bit of jeopardy. Yeah. Ascari, though, again, underrated. That's a great little complex of corners, the left by left.
But a Seraglio is a menagerie. It's a menagerie. If you don't know what a menagerie is, it's where you keep exotic animals. And there used to be one there.
And you can still visit the gates of that landmark, which is a large red pointed arch. And it's got a couple of really ornate towers. And it's very pretty. And you can still visit it.
Okay, so I just want to remind the listeners that hundreds of you asked for this. Literally hundreds of people said, you know that corner names episode, which was very much like this, you should do it again. So I take no blame whatsoever.
That's fine. Okay, you wanted Zandvoort, let's do Zandvoort.
Yep.
The sandy fort, right?
The orange mist.
The orange, the smoke. So you'll notice all of these corner names sort of end in bocht.
Yeah,
which
Dutch
is just Dutch for corner. Or
no, so right, okay. So I just want to, if there's any Dutch listeners, so I want both the Dutch listeners to get in touch and go, if we describe the Dutch language as from the fiery depths of Hades, like it's very aggressive. I cannot imagine what romantic gestures in Dutch sound like.
Same in German.
Oh, no, they sound strict, which some people are into. So,
no, but like, you know, like... So the classic, I love you, like in French, shut them. And then in German, ich liebe dich.
Yeah. And in Danish...
And that doesn't mean what you think it does, Chris.
In Danish, it just sounds horrible as well. Yeah, ilskedai. And you go, that can't be romantic. Yeah, there's too many vowels. Yeah, ilskedai. Too many vowels.
You've got a cold.
Yeah. Yeah, the French have won that one. But yeah, anyway, Dutch.
Definitely. And the Italians, for sure. Don't know what it is in Italian, just in general, Italians win. First corner at Zandvoort, Tarzan corner.
The hairpin.
The long.
It's a great. It's tanky. A good hairpin. It's a good hairpin. It's not consistent. It's not smooth. It's rough. You have to really navigate your way around it.
Slightly cambered as well, so it gives you a couple of different lines to go through it. Although the exit's much narrower than the entry, so it often gets cars together at the exit. So that's quite exciting.
So generally in the sim, which is the same as Formula One, I like this track as a mix-up track, as a variation track. So as an old school, not really big enough for modern big single-seaters, it's good. And I think the stuff they tried to do to make it suitable for Formula One is worthy. And so you can take a track and go, well, we know this isn't really going to work for Formula One. What can we do? So that turn three complex and then the final run onto the home straight where they go, well, we'll chuck some banking on there. And like, whether it works or not, that's the right approach to go, let's do something to make it fit for modern Formula One.
Banking is cool and it looks great on TV.
It is, which brings us on to the Hugenhulk box Sorry, the, say that again.
Go on. Say it again, but in a Dutch accent.
Spit out your teeth. The Hugenholzbocht, which is that banked corner, which the cars go into it and they run so high, it looks like they're going to clatter into the wall.
This is the one where Ricciardo got injured.
So Piastri crashed in front of him and he tried to avoid him, but steered into the wall and snapped his hand. So it's wonderful because I seem to remember, was it last year that Alonso at the start kept really low and made up a couple of places because everybody took the normal really high line and he just went, well, I'm just going to take the shorter route. And
which is amazing because Alonso was the one who got, let everyone on to the fact that the high line was superior. When they first went there, everyone had no clue what to do with this corner.
Yep.
And everyone was throwing out different lines. And Alonso was just like, we'll just go around the outside of it. And he was doing it all weekend and suddenly everyone clocked onto it. And then, last year he's like, well, actually, I'm going to take the inside. And he makes that work somehow as well.
It was all part of L plan.
L plan.
Now, that's one of my favorite corners on the whole calendar. I love the different lines.
It's really interesting. And in a way, like Sochi Turn 3 was trying to do something different in that same way. And they go, can we have more corners where you can take a different line and it's acceptable? And is that part of a good complex where you can take advantage of that? And F1 so rarely does that. I'm not quite sure that it then leads to great racing beyond it. But if you look at the turn two, which you so callously skipped, the right-hander turn two, which is
all of it, to be honest, because we haven't talked about that.
Oh, okay. Well, you said turn one was called Tarzan Corner.
Yeah, but I didn't tell you why.
Oh, I just thought because you swing around it.
No, it's the whole point of this. Right. So I don't have a concrete explanation for turn one here, right? I've got three possibles, and each one is slightly more ridiculous than the one that comes before it. Okay. So the first possible explanation, I even reached out to the circuit to try and get an answer on this.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did. I never got an answer. So if you're in the press room at Zandvoort and you got my email and you didn't respond to me and we'll do part three. So
no.
Tarzan supposedly was the nickname of the owner of this sort of a garden kitchen, garden, almost like those, like a garden center type place that has like a nice little restaurant on it, right?
You mean a garden center?
Kind of, but not like the ones you get in the UK.
He wouldn't know Spanish. He's not got kids and
hasn't.
You're
not a garden
them
center
in the sand
age. They all have a little cafe and a little sand pit.
No,
and
I know,
an
I know.
Aquarium-y thing.
But it was more kitchen than garden center, right? Anyway, he refused to give up his land when they were building the circuit back in 1948. And so as a compromise, he sold the land and got a corner named after him. Or, that's one potential, right?
Okay.
Or it's named after the Tarzan road rollers that were used in the construction of the circuit. Or Tarzan was just a very popular movie at the time of construction.
Which Tarzan version? Is it the...
The one that came out in the 1940s.
Not the Brendan Fraser one.
Not the Brendan Fraser one, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
Not the one during the Renaissance, no. So a lot of these corners are named after people. Either people who had big roles in the circuit or drivers who died at Zandvoort. And Gerlachbocht is one of them. So it was Dr. Wim Gerlach died there in 1947 in a sports car race. And Hugenholz as well, that we were talking about the turn three banked hairpin. He was the first circuit director, Hans Hugenholz. He designed Suzuka and Hockenheim, but not Zandvoort. He was just the circuit director. And then, you know, there's those two kinks that go up the hill after that hairpin before you get into...
Yes, it's basically a straight, corner. But yes, yeah.
It is basically a straight, but those two kinks have names as well. So the kink left is Hunsrug, which is... Hunsridge. And that is named after Cas Hunts, who was the chairman of the Royal Dutch Motorcycle Association, who had the idea for building on this specific part of land, Illy section. And then you have a Slotmacher, I think is how you say it.
Wow.
Rob Slotmacher, But yeah, he's a crash victim from 1979, and he also founded the Skid School. But he also founded the Skid School, which is right next to the circuit and still there. And then another one, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, but just to keep with the names theme, which is the chicane.
Before we skip straight to the chicane, can I just say that that segment, so you've got the Kinks that you're talking about, then it goes downhill into a right-hander, and then you've got this sequence where every single corner is trying to kill you. Every single corner is tempting you to accelerate early, it's tempting you to not brake, and that is one of the most challenging parts of that circuit.
So the first one of those is Schievelak, which is the old Dutch border. And the name for that comes for an oldie Dutch word for border.
Yeah, it denotes the border between the private circuit and the public sand dunes on the seafront. I forget that Zandvoort is literally on the beach. The edge of the track is sand dunes, and then there's nude people on the beach beyond that, which you only see from the helicopter.
Wait, is it actually a nude beach?
In my mind.
You had me fully believe. I would have totally taken your one. I'd have rocked up there. We're like, right, guys.
I'm making travel plans. Zandvoort deserves buff spanners in the buff.
Goodness me.
So do you just learn these things, you do, or have you been researching this? Have you been looking up? Because honestly, it sounds...
Of course I have.
You're like the Susie Dent of corner names, you two.
Yep.
Bit of both. Obviously a little bit of research goes on, but you kind of just absorb it many years. Well, geeks like me and Chris do, clearly. I mean, he emailed the circuit.
I got a response from Spa.
Nice. So, that was the last time we already did that.
No, I did all this ages ago.
Oh, okay.
I did all this before we did episode one. I've had to come back to this today and be like, oh God, I forgot everything I wrote down 5 months ago.
Okay.
Gotta get reacquainted with it.
Is a good chicane. I like this chicane in the context of chicanes.
That great complex that you mentioned,
right?
Turns 9 and 10, don't have corner names. So screw those corners. Yep.
We could name them if you want. So the right-hander that tries to throw you off, and then there's the left-hander where any point at which you accelerate is the wrong point. And then as soon as you do accelerate, it was too late.
Yep, exactly. Call it oopsie. So yes, the chicane, another one named after a person. This is Hans Ernst. And he is, again, a former owner of the circuit, director of the circuit. But he had a major role in getting the circuit redeveloped in the 90s in particular, and getting it back on the international racing scene. And this corner before that was known as the Nissan Bocht, the Nissan corner. And nothing to do with like actual promotional stuff. Nissan didn't buy the rights to it. Just called that because there were a lot of Nissan rescue vehicles there.
That's interesting. So by the way, you go to more UK tracks and more European track events. Have you ever noticed a tradition of clapping the extraction vehicles as they do laps? Because here in Miami, there was a massive cheer for the extraction trucks and safety vehicles as they came around and did their preps.
I'd say so.
Yeah, I've seen it at Silverstone.
I've never done that before. I'm going to do it from now on.
Do you not appreciate the volunteers that risk their lives to make your sport?
No, I say they bought a ticket, let them crash. No, that's an airplane reference from a 1970s film. No, of course I appreciate it. It's great, but I don't think that they should feed off our appreciation. I think the venues who make millions upon millions upon millions and pay F1 who make millions upon millions upon millions, I think Derek in the extraction truck should just get a check. Just throw the guy a check. It's honestly not controversial. There's so much money swilling around. The people who run the food stands make more money than the guys volunteering to run on track and pick up a front wing. I just honestly don't think it's controversial to say that they should be paid for their time.
It's not like clapping, the pilot when he lands the plane, is it? These guys
I do that.
Do you actually?
Yeah, I clap. Mate, we were just flying through the actual sky and then didn't die and then hit the ground fast and everyone was okay. Yeah.
No, okay.
Flying's okay. Hard, man.
You clap at the end of movies as well.
I used to, and then my family told me to stop. But yeah, that is definitely part of my culture, is to clap at the end of the movie. Yes.
100%. Oh, Lord. Yeah. Right.
If I'm on my own, yes, I will. Word.
You and I. Speaking of the wonderful people in Orange, we come back to Zandvoort with the Orange Grandstand.
So we're still live. Nice. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Where, you know, at that, this is, that's the massive grandstand where the flares and the orange just sea of smoke comes across the track. And
where do you stand on that? Where do you stand on that?
Away from the direction of the wind, I think.
No. Is it morally? Where do you stand on Zandvoort and its sea of, and Spa as well with the flares and stuff?
Yeah. So what I abhor is the annoyance that you would feel having bought a £300 grandstand ticket to not be able to see anything.
Yeah, exactly.
So same with people with massive flags. Like, you know, Monza, for example, when they have that, you know, 100-meter wide Ferrari flag that they put in the grandstand.
Yeah, I know.
You're underneath that. What is going on? So, yeah, I don't like it for that reason. Safety-wise, they go through it in a second. It's not.
Yeah. Safety-wise, it's not a big thing. I would find it very irritating to go to. That would be a reason to not go to Zandvoort, but they don't need my ticket price. One thing from the stands as well is, do you stand up when something exciting is happening?
No.
Right. Yeah. So in Miami,
I don't help people's way.
Yeah, this is it. So in Miami,
everyone does it.
In Miami, where I am. Friday, Saturday, everyone sat down. It was fine, except for the race start where everyone stood up. But basically, on the race day, for the first few laps, everyone stood up in excitement. And then you go, oh. So every couple of minutes, you've got to stand up and go, oh, okay, to see anything. And then again, when Norris took the lead after the safety car, every time they went around, everyone stood up. It's like, but if you all just stayed sat down, we could all just sit down. But how old are you that you can't appreciate a good sit?
I've paid for a seat. Yeah. I want to sit in the damn thing.
I don't want to do squats. My goodness.
Yeah.
Heineken Silver for that reason, not that light, you know. I'm having to stand up and sit down with it. Yeah.
So I'm going to the British Grand Prix this year. If anybody wants to come hit me up, I'll be at the back. The very back.
I've already got a mortgage, mate. I'm all right.
Exactly. But yeah, I'll be at the back of the arena grandstand, literally the back row. So that if I do have to stand up, I won't be getting in people's way. I am that British. And also, I can turn around and look through the back of the grandstand and see them going down Wellington Straight.
Oh, it's a sprint weekend, Silverstone?
Right. It has been for the last few years until I buy a ticket and then and it's not. Okay. I hate sprint weekends unless I'm at the track.
So what we might do for the Silverstone Grand Prix is we might have a Thursday or Friday event in Northampton. If you would want to come and hang out with the Miss Apex panel.
Ooh.
Wait, let me just check if I'm in the
country. No, I specifically made sure that Chris wouldn't be here. I don't, you know.
If I'm not there, it's not worth coming to.
In real time, on a show that I'm not going to edit, he's looking up his calendar. So
I'm in Hockenheim that weekend, so it's not worth coming to. Don't bother.
Brilliant. And also, Matt's far away, so he probably won't come either. So just me and Catman.
That's the best two ones right there.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's it.
How are we doing on the whole corner names thing? How's that
going? So I've got one more from that. Okay. The last corner, I am going to, because we covered it in part one, because it was a very interesting one, and I'm not going to tell you what it was here. I'm going to say, if you want to hear it, go listen to part one.
I'll put a link in the show notes, maybe.
Absolutely. So the penultimate corner at Zandvoort is the Kumobocht. And this is apparently a reference to Kumho tyres. It's not actually typically referred to this anymore, but I think it is kind of still its name, or it's a name it's had. Now, why Kumho tyres? It's a Korean company. It's not really got anything to do with Zandvoort, but apparently it's got probably something to do with the fact that they supplied the tyres to the European Formula 3 series at the time of the Masters of Zandvoort event that happened every year. It was one of these iconic Formula 3 events that was up there with the Po Grand Prix and the Macau Grand Prix as well, you know, back in the heydays of actual Formula 3 before it got ruined with these modern cars. No, I'm not going to say who by.
That was when they had the massive rocket launches on the side of the airboxes, wasn't it?
They still do have those cars racing because they're in Super Formula Lights in the Euro Formula as well. It's set similar kind of car. But yeah, back in the days of the F3 Euro series that, like, you know, Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel and Lando Norris came up through.
Chris, you've really entertained us with this corner episodes podcast part two. Maybe those hundreds of idiots were correct to do so. Where should people follow you? It's at Chris on Racing on Twitter, but you're also doing so much real life grown up commentary now.
Yeah. So I'm going to Hockenheim this weekend, round two of GT Open and its support series. Then I'm off to Portimao again, 2 weeks after that for Ultimate Cup as well. So yeah, it's a busy month.
Can we announce the voiceover thing, or is that to come? No, don't. If you've got any doubt, don't do it.
I don't know. It's not like a secret or anything. I'm voicing over a documentary for a race team.
Yeah, but you're going to be like the Will Buxton DTS thing where you say, these cars have four wheels. And if you start at the front, that means that the other cars are behind you.
Yeah.
When the checkered flag flies, that means the race is finished. You've got to do all that stuff. If you need any talking heads, I'm all over this. Go and follow Chris at Chris on Racing and follow Chris Catman Turner as well at Catman F1 on Twitter. And I will put his personal phone number in the show notes as well. So if, like me and Chris, you have Chris, I joined you. I had a baby sparrow in my house and I didn't know what to do. So I called Catman.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah. It was this last time we did this corners episode, we took the piss out of Chris for me doing that.
Well, we did the meet the panel. So actually, that's something I keep meaning to do, is to put together all the winter meet the panels. So every show that we did in the winter had a meet the panel segment. And I'm going to do a supercut where you can hear the story of Chris panicking because a sparrow was in his kitchen. But for me, it was a baby sparrow.
There was a lot of context.
I know, that we don't have time for, unfortunately. So,
yesterday I was trying to
save the baby sparrow. You were trying to save yourself from a sparrow that you thought was perhaps deadly. And as we said last week, right, I really want you to click the Race Weekend magazine, not only because we get a percentage commission and not only because it's my friend Magnus, but honestly, if you want like a coffee table book that makes you look fancy, this edition is absolutely that. So you put that in your dining room, on your piano. It's a talking piece. People come in and go, oh my goodness, what's that? And they flick through it and you go, yes, that's right. That's the kind of fancy book I have because I'm a fancy kind of guy. Click the link. You will not regret buying this. I promise you, I absolutely love everything Race Weekend does. And you're supporting Missed Apex podcast as well. So before you follow those idiots, click on that link. But the first thing you need to do is follow me at Spanners Ready. I'm the best one. Until we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex podcast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.